And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Athletic NBA Show, Monday through on the Athletic Podcast Network.
From the Golden Gate to the New York Bay.
What I have access to is a bit different than the public.
Tamper with you.
Welcome to Tampering.
For this beautiful game of basketball that we all love and talk about every single day.
With Sam Hamm, Anthony Slater, and Fred Katz.
To be able to bring people together.
What do you do, baby?
Reportedly at the center of an NBA investigation
into tampering accusations.
And the message to
executives in the league is
stop talking about players on other teams.
What did I do?
The charges filed.
Impermissible contact.
Was it right or wrong?
Tampering charges are really difficult to prove.
You know me, I talk.
Kind of awkward to even talk about it. I can't even mention teams anymore.
Ask me what I like to play with Kevin Durant.
Trial you want with tampering.
They're always ahead of the rules.
It's not rocket science.
Hey, baby, you don't have to tamper with the guys.
I didn't tamper. I'm just telling you what happened.
Here's your host, Sam Amick.
Hello and welcome to the Tampering Podcast, part of the Athletic NBA Show Network. I'm Sam Amick, national writer on the NBA at The Athletic, here as always with my guys, Fred Katz out east, Anthony Slater out west. Slater, I'm going to throw it to you first, brother, because we got like a hardcore travel episode today. You're chilling in the Denver airport, en route to Milwaukee. We kind of found a little slot of time during a layover where you can come at us, you know, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. How you feeling, man? You look amazing.
I feel like that was sarcastic. I'm good. Denver to me is like the it's like the connection airport, right? I assume you guys have connected plenty in Denver over the years. Maybe I'm saying that as having covered the Thunder, you know. So I know Fred's probably been in this airport plenty as a connection airport, but I'm good. They got the little second floor. There's kind of like an airplane over there, I don't know.
Oh, there's an airplane.
Yeah. I knew
could
that.
Could you imagine if there weren't?
What's funny is when I said that, I was like, well, obviously there are. But I mean, it's like tied up. It's almost like a, what would you call it?
You know what else? It's weird. I've been to the Denver airport. They have runways. Have you guys ever noticed that? They have runways.
There's actually a couple restaurants. This is crazy, but a restaurant or two over here.
They have a voodoo donut now, I think.
In the Denver airport? Now that would actually be news. That is something. I think.
Isn't that important? It was, but now it's like all over, there's one.
This is the type of news that might make me hop off the podcast, Fred, before my connection, if there's really a voodoo airport somewhere or voodoo donut here.
It's funny, a random slice of travel life for me. I'm in LA, like I mentioned, Celtics Clippers tonight, Celtics Lakers tomorrow. And I haven't hit the road beyond Sacramento and San Francisco in a little while. So today I'm checking out of the hotel and just, you know, speaking of voodoo donuts, and quick shout out to whoever was the kind soul who bought a bunch of donuts and like milk and coffee for the housekeeping folks who were doing their thing. I was walking down the hallway and this lady had a huge smile on her face and told me that somebody had just rolled by with donuts and a little bit of appreciation during the holidays. I thought that was a nice gesture. So good cheer. Fred, are you good, my friend? I think you're home. Your Knicks, and this is part of today's show. You know, I'm not teasing very much just yet, but we're going to talk about the King's Beam, that has taken over not only the city, but the nation, the basketball world, the purple beam that goes up into the sky. We have the mystery man behind the beam whose identity has never been revealed until about 30 minutes from now. And Fred, your Knicks had to come spoil all the fun and beat the Kings yesterday in the Garden. We wanted all the good vibes to come on the show today. And so it's all right. We'll still have fun. But you know, your Knicks had a good win. Kings didn't look too good, though.
The Knicks are unbeatable now. You know, what are the Kings going to do? They're unbeatable. They're unbeamable. They just can't lose.
All right. So on today's show, that's the back end. And we are very, 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 very excited to have the mystery man for the beam coming on the show. But we are going to focus at the top of the show here, guys, on, you know, the action of the weekend, front and center, Saturday night. I know it's been a couple of days, but we can spin it forward. Is the Boston Celtics were in the Chase Center for the first rematch against the Warriors since the finals. Did not go the way I thought it was going to go. Slater, I can go ahead and publicly admit, on our drive down together, I think I handicapped the Celtics with a 22-point victory. That's what I had in mind. That, you know, Warriors had no Andrew Wiggins. Obviously, the Celtics no Robert Williams, but I didn't
that's
think
that's pretty
the
specific, Warriors... 22.
I know. This that's guy's the number I picked.
124, 102, or like, you know.
And it's all these, you know what it is? It's the proliferation of all, this is my quick rant, all the gambling sites that are now so omnipresent in our industry. You just, you suddenly, it's not okay to say, I think the Celtics are going to win. You feel like you got to put a number on it. So maybe that's what was happening in the subconscious. But to spin it forward, you know, I mentioned Celtics got Lakers, Clippers. They got a big road trip that they're on still. You know, and the Warriors, that was a pretty kind of, you know, kind of identity defining, not defining, but like just a nice win for those guys. They looked good. They kind of reminded the world that they're still pretty formidable. So let's start there. Pull some meaning for us and the listeners out of that game and give us kind of, shoot, I'll even do the old kind of 1 to 10 scale. How substantive and actually kind of impactful was that win as December wins go for the 4-time champs?
Oh, I mean, it's their best win of the season by a large margin. You know, I think the other argument would be one of their only two road wins at this point. They're 2-11 on the road. Like, they really did handle the Timberwolves in Minnesota well. That's probably, like, the only other candidate. But that's not close to beating this Celtics team. Having what did the Celtics beat the Suns by? Like, two nights before? Like, 35?
I think it was 378 points.
Yeah, essentially. But, you know, and what I did like about what the NBA is doing with both Celtics-Warriors matchups this year is they gave both teams 2 days off beforehand, right? You went out to a practice at USF for the Celtics. The Warriors
yeah, it was
had
great.
Yeah, the Warriors
Celtics
actually
PR, man. Nice job. Yeah.
Sat Steph and Draymond on Wednesday, and I didn't send them to Utah, so they had like 4 days, you know, of rest time. And you saw it with Klay Thompson, I thought, right? Like, fresh legs, Klay Thompson pins a Jason Tatum layup early in the game, and I just generally was fresh. And it's kind of an argument. I don't know if you're hearing the Southwest flight calls coming over the audio.
No, that's
right
not
now
too bad. You're good.
But generally
flair.
You know, no Andrew Wiggins was an alarm bell going into this game, because you're facing the team with, you know, two of the best wings in the league, certainly the team with the best combo wing scoring in the league with Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. You wondered, how was this Warriors team, who had been disappointing defensively this season, going to guard that without Wiggins, who was maybe, you know, one of the top stories in the finals was how he guarded Tatum. So I think coming out of that, not only do the Warriors get kind of a momentum building win, maybe they're about to play at Milwaukee Tuesday and they have a tough 6-game road trip. It's where I'm on the way right now. But Jonathan Kuminga's emergence to me from a local perspective is the big story here. I mean, he's been really good in about 4 out of the last 5 games. He was awesome in Utah. He was guarding Luka Doncic in a Dallas game recently. They gave him some assignments on Tatum. He dunked on Tatum in the second half. You know, I think, what do you have, like 14 bench points, something like that. But it's just this team, as we've all talked about, has been on a search for legitimate rotation pieces early in the season. Their depth had fallen off so much. The youth movement wasn't working. James Wiseman is currently in the G League. He's had a couple nice G League games, but he's still in the G League. Moses Moody on the fringe of the rotation. They needed to find something from one of these young guys, and Kuminga is emerging right now, pretty obviously, and in a pretty loud way.
Kuminga, 14 points.
You know what's amazing about that too? You mentioned Wiggins, Slater not being there, but like this Celtics second unit, and this is something I wanted to talk about in regards to the Celtics too. Celtics second unit has just been absolutely destroying teams this year, destroying them. And the Warriors, meanwhile, have just, like you said, searched for depth like crazy. I mean, I think Stephen Curry moving on and them changing his rotation and staggering him and him playing more with the second unit has really, really helped them, because when Curry plays, they're just really good. And when he doesn't, they're not. But being able to withstand just the barrage that is Boston's second unit is so incredibly difficult too. And the Warriors being able to pull that off is like, that's a big thing for them. Like Dante DiVincenzo walking away from that minute those minutes with a completely kind of forgettable line, but being a plus 20 is not really a thing.
You know what part of that line
that you saw before?
Yeah. You know what part of that line I know was not forgotten in the locker room, and they continue to mention it? DiVincenzo, I believe, had 8 rebounds in 17 minutes. Yep. And rebounding was a big issue for them early in the season. DiVincenzo missed a chunk of games with a hamstring. Like, the way he is rebounding, I know it sounds strange, right? A backup guard, but like, that's been huge for them. And, you know, the big rotation tweak, which has solved a lot of their issues that Fred was mentioning, was Draymond Green now plays with the second unit permanently. You know, now he's not coming off the bench, but when Steph's not on the floor, Draymond is. And that has solved a lot of what ailed them early in the season.
Well, and Kuminga, to go broaden the scope a little bit, because you mentioned, you know, this last game, he was 14 points against the Celtics, 24 against Utah in their 1-point loss, you know, 10, so three straight double-digit games, 20-plus minutes each time.
It's not the scoring, though. I mean, the scoring, obviously, you know, they need the boost, they need that.
No, he's filling it up, yeah.
It's the individual defense. You know, yeah. They put him on. He did. You guys see the Clarkson play in Utah? Now they gacked the game away. They gave up a 4-point lead, but what felt like the game winning stop. He stops Clarkson in isolation, blocks his shot, grabs the rebound. Clarkson flagrant fouls him and puts his fists up to try to fight. Clarkson gets ejected, but it was just you know, kind of epitomized what he's been individually defensively lately, and he's not doing a lot of the mistakes that was keeping him off the floor. We know what type of athletic talent he is, but you know, they need athleticism, and when he's not on the floor, and particularly when Wiggins has not been there lately, they've never been that athletic a team. He just juices them in ways that they haven't, and currently he's playing like Warrior style basketball. That's been the big thing.
Gentlemen, we do end up talking Warriors a lot, so because we have our special guest coming on in about 15 minutes or so, I'm going to shift to the other side of this finals rematch matchup, and I want to get your thoughts on the Celtics, because I had not seen them in person this year. Honestly, it's always, I don't know how you guys feel from the reporting side, it's always fun when you have these matchups that almost spark kind of nostalgia from the finals before, and so I found myself enjoying, you know, seeing that Celtics green again and seeing some of their personalities. Slater, you mentioned it. Their practice the day before the game, again, media-wise, was wonderful. They had it at USF, which is, you know, you got to mention that that's the hallowed grounds of the late, great Bill Russell. And so you got, you know, Boston's current greats, the Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown leading their practice. Great spirit. A lot of, I know it sounds corny, but it's true. A lot of joy on the floor. Guys just out there long after practice was over, hamming it up. There was a video that was out there of Tatum jumping on Grant Williams' back and just being silly. So really good vibes. I talked to Tatum. Jared Weiss, one of our Celtics beat writers, talked to Jaylen Brown, and we ended up kind of merging those two conversations for a fun story with those two guys weighing in on all things Celtics. What do we think about where they're at? Because they are obviously best team in the league right now record-wise, and just a few quick tidbits for listeners who might not have been tracking Boston's play. 121 offensive rating per cleaning the glass is the highest in NBA history. So after all those years of the questions of, you know, can Tatum and Brown play together? Can they move the ball? You know, former coach Ime Udoka had, or suspended coach, I guess, still technically, had pounded that, you know, philosophy so much last season. They seem to have finally evolved to a team that does move the ball offensively, potent, and ironically, their defense, which has been their calling card, is a little below its normal standards. Tatum and Brown, last thing real quick, in terms of combos on the scoring front, third highest scoring combined average in league history at the moment, with Shaq and Kobe number two, two different seasons at 56.8 points a game, Harden and Westbrook in Houston in 2019-20. So they're dominant, but then you see this kind of this take a pulse game against the Warriors, and they obviously didn't get the job done. So let me throw it to you, Fred, as the resident East Coast guy. What are we thinking about the Celtics?
I mean, the incredible thing with Tatum and Brown, and I think Tatum obviously has a great MVP argument right now, and I think Jaylen Brown has a great All-NBA argument right now. And the greatest thing about them, yes, they're playing great together. The Celtics' ball movement is remarkable right now. The quality of shots they're getting is remarkable. They're shooting the best percentage in the league on threes. Well, I think taking the most or the second most threes. I mean, the quality of threes they get, they're kind of all just hit the paint, kick back out, and they're spot up looks. They've got like, I think 97 different players who are shooting better than 45% from three. I think that's right. I have to fact check it. It's obscene. Like Brogdon's 49% and Grant Williams is like 45 and Horford's like 46 and they just got all these Sam Hauser is just hasn't missed a three all season, I think. I mean, they have all these role players who are killing it, but look, don't get me wrong, it's ultimately a result of them hitting shots, but the process is such beautiful basketball, and part of that is Tatum and Brown playing well together, obviously, but another part of it is just when they play a part. They are staggering those two guys. Second unit lineups with Jason Tatum are just eviscerating opponents. When they have like Grant Williams, the lineup with Grant Williams and Sam Hauser and Brogdon, who I think might be sixth man of the year out there together, they're just destroying teams. Tatum without Brown right now is plus 23 per 100 possessions. And by the way, when Tatum is off the court, and he might be the MVP of the league, but Brown is on, they're plus 10 per 100. So those two guys are just holding up the offense at all points completely on their own, and kind of spurring all these incredible shots for the rest of the team. It's an amazing conglomeration of players that play so beautifully together. And when they get Rob Williams back, by the way, that's a top five defense too.
Close.
I think they're insane. I think they're for sure the best team in the league right now.
Sam, just a quick update on the Robert Williams front. It was funny. The day before that Warriors game, you guys probably saw some of the social media. Rob, we sat there and watched him play pickup. Looked pretty good. He actually did media, and he was playing coy with his timeline. He kept saying, I'm day-to-day. He was pushed a little bit on, well, could you play against the Warriors? And he smiled and said, I'm day-to-day. Joe Mazzulla, their coach, did the same thing. So we thought, okay, he's playing against the Warriors. And now as we record, he will not play against the Clippers. But I think we're going to see Rob for the first time all season pretty soon.
That's huge. I mean, part of the reason the Warriors struggled at times in the finals offensively was because Rob Williams at the rim wasn't there the other night. I think that was a big deal. But I wanted to ask you about Tatum, Sam, because I know you did sit down with him in USF. And so much of this early season surge from Tatum, which includes his name being floated, obviously, in the MVP conversation, to me, is being tied back to the motivation level from how the finals went down, right? What did he shoot, like 37% over that six games? I mean, in a lot of ways, not to say he takes blame for the finals loss, but I think, if Tatum has a strong finals, the Celtics might be champions. And that clearly, as he talked about with you, motivated his work in the summer, it seemed like. And he had just, been awesome against Phoenix, and you just felt like Saturday night against the Warriors like was going to be his full punctuation point for this early point of the season, right? Like, go back, slay the dragon that, kind of ticked you off all summer. Were you surprised by his game? I mean, what did he go, 6-19? He was, I don't want to say low energy, but like, there was no Andrew Wiggins out there. You know what I mean? There was not an elite defender in front of him, and he had really what looked like NBA Finals Game 7 for him. It was super inefficient,
Well, they wish they got to Game 7, buddy. He was 6-21 on Saturday against the Warriors, 2-9 from deep, minus 13. So it was a bad night. And I actually, it's funny, this relates to your question, Slater. In doing this piece with Jared Weiss, we were kind of just going over the language of the top of the story, right? And there was a line that said something about how the pursuit of that elusive first title for this group remains as painful as ever. And so Jared and I just debated the word painful, because his point was, well, after they lost to the Warriors, Jason acted like, I think his quote was, this game means more to you guys, the media, than it did to us. So he downplayed it. And I'm like, hold on, okay, I get that. But Jaylen Brown also got up there after the Warriors loss and flat out told the world that they had this thing circled on the calendar and that he thought they were too focused on it. I went in the Celtics locker room, and, we know that for Boston, Marcus Smart is their Draymond Green, right? Like that emotional leader. Marcus Smart was devastated. I said hello to him. He's always such a nice guy. Marcus Smart was not in a good place. He was very frustrated by that game. So it felt like, emotionally, kind of the mental side of the game, that this thing, they couldn't figure out how to be at their best against that team that ripped their hearts out last June. And so for Tatum's purposes, you're right. Like the loss in the finals where he, I just had it here, where he averaged 21.5 points, 36.7% shooting overall, and terrible in game 1, terrible in game 6, the bookends of the series. That motivated him a ton. I mean, there was this somewhat kind of charming story that I had read in Slam Magazine, did a piece on Tatum, how Father's Day, as you guys remember, was like the day after the finals came to an end. And Jason typically, with his adorable son Deuce, would find some little place to do a getaway for Father's Day. And he had to really be talked into going on a trip after these finals because he was not in a good place after they lost. And throughout the summer, he locked in. He trained in LA for a long time. And this sounds like a very kind of first world flex, but I think you'll get the point. He is a somewhat new golfer in his non-basketball life. And there's even been stuff online about how Tatum picked up golf not that long ago, and now he's crushing the ball 350 yards. So he even kind of laughed. He's like, I went 6 weeks without playing golf in LA. Like, I didn't go out very much. I think he said maybe once or twice in a 7 week span in LA. So he locked in. They, you know, and you see this almost every year from the losing participant in the finals, Phoenix the year before. Yeah, these guys get paid a ton of money, but it's really hard, clearly, just compartmentalize that. It's really hard to get that close to your professional goal of winning the entire thing and see it slip away on that stage. Because even Brown mentioned, quick final point, is, you know, Jaylen Brown mentioned like the eyeballs. Like, you get on that stage and you know that so much of the world is watching you perform, but then when you lose, you know that they just watched you fail. And you know, it's binary in that way, it seems like, for a lot of them. So it drove them, and it's driven them to be really good in this regular season, just not when they faced the squad that got the best of them.
Which creates, I don't know, like maybe a somewhat pressurized game for them in Boston. I think they're playing right around MLK Day. It might be an MLK Day game, Warrior Celtics, but not at this point. I wouldn't predict that they're going to rematch in the finals, but if they do, if you're the Celtics, I'm not sure you want to be going into that finals, you know, still without a win over the Warriors. I mean, I don't know how much we take from that, but.
I would say that to me, the Robert Williams thing is what is going to help you not lose sleep at night. Like, you got this thing that didn't come into play in this game. Obviously, the Warriors have the Wiggins thing as well, but the Warriors aren't the ones trying to talk themselves into the idea that they can beat this team. But, I mean, they're incredible. And my final thing here, and Fred, we're going to bounce around a little bit. I know you got some thoughts on your Wizards that we're going to get to before we talk all things Beam. I think that the players deserve a lot of credit for the way they have, how professional they've been through the Ime Udoka situation and embracing Joe Mazzulla. I had never actually met Joe. I got a chance to talk to Joe for a little while at practice, enjoyed talking to him. And it's like, man, to hear it out of Tatum and Brown's mouth that, you know, Tatum in particular, he told me he was extremely frustrated that the organization, and his quote was, kept them in the dark. Regarding why they chose to handle the Udoka situation the way they did. You know, in today's NBA, when superstars have so much power, the trust that they put in the organization to not, you know, let it derail what they were trying to accomplish. And he basically said, like, we don't want to sacrifice what we know we can be because of this situation that we couldn't control. But that's easier said than done. And it's pretty remarkable that they have been as good as they have been, considering the coaching aspect. All right, Fred.
I mean, is Joe Mazzulla also, like, Joe Mazzulla just seems like he's just a really good coach, right?
Yeah,
like,
no, I mean, he's doing great.
I know that part of it, we all had the same thought coming into the year. Just like, there's so much chaos around the coaching situation. There's so much instability, and there are so many unknowns that how can they possibly get off to just a roaring kind of start given all of the extracurriculars going on there, right? But it seems like Joe Mazzulla is just a really good coach, right? I mean, they're playing a beautiful brand of basketball. They play so well together. They're running sorts of sets. They didn't really run as much last year. They're working unbelievably well. He's maximizing his talent. I don't think you can point to one guy on the Celtics and even say, okay, that guy is having the year he's supposed to have. It almost feels like everybody there is kind of maxed out at the best version of what they could be right now, right? And I think that's a statement on the front office and the player types that have been put together and how they've worked together really well, but also how the players are being used and how comfortable they obviously are inside that team right now.
Well, then I will cap with this, because that's a very good point by you. This is a quote from Jason Tatum. I apologize. This is actually from Jaylen Brown. on that topic. Quote, without Brad Stevens, Ime wouldn't have been able to thrive in that position. Without Ime, Joe wouldn't be here. Everybody, everything has been part of cultivating what we see now. All the fans, all the media, everything has been brewing toward helping us get to where we're at now. And hopefully it'll keep going so we can get over the hump. So there is your Celtics breakdown for this week. You know, next time we got to bring Mr. Weiss and maybe the kid on to talk about Boston. But Fred, before we pivot to the beam, you got some thoughts on your Zards. I don't know how you pronounce Zards. Is it, you know, did I do it right? I was worried about that nickname.
Yeah, Zards.
Zards?
The Zards.
Okay. They're 11-16.
Washington Wizards.
I don't need to set it up too much, but you know, this team that you used to cover, they're 11-16. They have lost
8 out of 9.
Thank you. Trying to cheat and look at the
six in a row here. And 8 out of 9. They were 10-7.
All right, microphone is yours, brother. Talk to us about the Zards.
I just want to know what the heck is going to happen. They have renovated the roster so many times. You know, I covered the Wizards for years, and I still, you know, when you move on from covering a team, you don't just like lose your passion for an interest in that team, right? They still own real estate in your head in wanting to know what is going on. And this team is 11-16. They just shelled out a 5-year supermax contract for Bradley Beal. They have upcoming Kristaps Porzingis potential
no
free
trade
agency.
Clause, I mean, by the way, no trade clause.
No trade clause.
Rare.
Everybody talked about, you know, people talk about Porzingis, you know, as if, you know, Porzingis is not a massive deal, and people talk about it like it's a terrible contract. But with the year Porzingis is having, where like he's got a legit all-star argument right now, he might be opting out or not picking up that player option at the end of this year and hitting free agency. Kyle Kuzma's on an expiring, and you're going to have to pay him. They are... I know people don't really talk about the Wizards that much, and I know they're never really a part of the national conversation, but they are in a fascinating place right now. They have a first-round pick that's going out actually to the Knicks, and it's protected all the way to 2026. They are in a position right now where they kind of have to choose before the deadline. Okay, are we going to renovate the roster and put another sort of team around Beal again? There was the Beal and Wall team. There was the team where Wall got hurt and they kind of just tried to tank. There was the team where they traded Wall for Westbrook and they ran that out there. There was the team last year where Beal got hurt and they ended up kind of falling off again. And now there's this one around Porzingis and Kuzma and Beal, and they tried to win and it's not quite working. They could try to trade Porzingis and Kuzma to get something at the deadline. I doubt they're going to try to trade Porzingis. I think that's someone they definitely want to hold on to. Kuzma, I could see it going either way. And I think they want to make like a legit move this summer. And I wouldn't be surprised if a star came up and you started to hear their name in that kind of stuff. And I just like, I'm like, I don't know. Are you guys as fascinated with this as me, where like the Wizards...
No.
We've been saying for years.
No, we are not.
We've been saying for years, pick a direction. And it's
right?
Like, at this point, it's like there are a lot of different directions to go. And they're all just like, none of them are so great.
Fred Katz, to answer your question, and not your second question, which that answer was no. to your first question, what's going to happen here? My prediction is they are going to, over the course of this Bradley Beal max contract without a trade clause, continue to sit anywhere between maybe at the top end, the 7 seed, and to the bottom side, maybe like the 12. They're just going to kind of linger there. They're going to pick very uninspiring players at like the 9th pick, the 13th pick in the first round, the 12th pick, like non-future stars. And they were going to be relatively out of the national consciousness by December 12th. Because that's just like how they've kind of built the roster around Bradley Beal. It's how I expect them to continue to build the roster around Bradley Beal.
Not the national consciousness on this pod on December.
No, not
because
out of
this podcast, we're talking Wizards. The other oddity with the Wizards, by the way, is so on Saturday night, they have the big John Wall homecoming, right? It's the first time John Wall has come back to DC, played in front of fans. The fans in DC just absolutely love John Wall. And I know it was a big moment for them, but the Wizards had like a ton of guys who are out, right? Beal is out and a bunch of their guards are out. Morris is out, and Johnny Davis is on G League assignment. When the Wizards have so few players, and Johnny Davis, who was the 10th pick in the draft, and struggled immensely at Summer League, and has struggled immensely in his NBA minutes is on G League assignment. I think that says a lot about where the Wizards are at with Johnny Davis right now, too. Where, like, I think there are some people there who are really worried about what could be happening with him. They're just in such a weird situation. All that being said, like, so they've got that encumbered pick going out. They tried to get in on the Donovan Mitchell stuff this summer, and they couldn't really make an offer because they have that protected pick going out. I've always thought that owning somebody's protections going out really far is a really nice thing, because you just kind of own a bit of their future. If they want to make a big trade where they have to trade a bunch of picks, then they have to come to you and try to get something through that. I would not be surprised if there was a big name, if the Wizards just tried to do something like that, lessen protections on a pick and see if they can go into this summer with four picks to put something around Bradley Beal. Like, there's just like, and I don't know if it's going to work, but
But you're
going to
be locked in the whole time, Fred Katz.
I'm going to be locked in the whole time.
I am less
locked in. I give you props, Fred, because from a marketing standpoint, if you're trying to get the national consciousness of the Wizards elevated, no better way than to preempt the Beam discussion that we are going to get to in a minute with your Wizards talk and your Wizards rant and your Wizards passion. We're going to take a quick break. We have got our special guest, Mystery Man, on the call right now. We're going to come back to him on the other side and have some fun talking about all things Kings and the purple beam that is taking over the basketball world. We'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
All right, we are back. The big moment has arrived. Guys, Fred and Slater, we never really had a moment like this where we kind of trump something up, and I try to put my, like, old school, you know, I don't really have a radio voice, but like radio style where you got to master the art of the tease and keep telling people, you stay for the back end of the show. We got something big, you know. So today, a guy who I've known a very long time, always been such a kind soul and somebody I've enjoyed watching him work, watching him do his thing. Been with the Kings for quite some time now, entertainment director of the Sacramento Kings, and the man who played a significant part, although I already botched your title, Mo, senior director of entertainment, Mo Brazelton. LinkedIn is a beautiful thing. Man, I built it up and then I botched the introduction. That's all right. Mo Brazelton, who has had a lot to do with the purple beam that has been taking over the basketball world and has been so much fun as the Kings have played better. They're 14-11 right now. And Mo, before I bring you on officially and throw it to you, I will tell you that Fred, that's the upper right corner for you. Fred is the Knicks beat writer at our place. And I was giving him a hard time because it was like, dang, Fred, like your team had to kind of kill some of our vibe coming into the talk today. It would have been even better if the Kings got a win. But listen, they have lit that beam 14 times this year, and you had a lot to do with this incredibly creative, impactful idea. So first of all, thank you for coming on. How are you?
Cool. Thanks, Sam. Thanks for having me. Nice to meet you, Anthony and Fred. This is like, I've been on podcasts. Well, this is like a first for me. So yeah, I'm doing great. Team's on the road. So being able to get ahead for our next homestand, which is going to be what, 6 games in 11 days coming up. So yeah,
it's a tough one.
To stay ahead of the schedule, but yeah, thanks for having me again, Sam.
Of course. Well, let's start here. You know, you and I have been in touch. We talked after a game recently about this stuff. And as you know, my interest in kind of exploring this topic was born out of the fact that it's like, all right, it's not just Sacramento. The whole league is talking about the beam. Social media loves it, you know, and it's from a marketing standpoint or, you know, promotion, whatever you want to say, like it's few and far between in my experience when you see a creative idea like this really resonate and land in the way that the beam has. And so my interest and curiosity was, all right, I fully understand that Kings owner Vivek Rana Dive for years now has talked about, you know, different creative ways to, you know, inspire the fans and have Golden One Center be the type of thing that feels like a community fireplace and that, you know, his ideas kind of permeate throughout the organization and other people were involved. But I kind of wanted to get to the nitty gritty of like, all right, when they're in the meetings and you're talking about the beam and the ideas, I want to know the origin story. So let's go down that road, you know, and I guess the first question that I'll throw your way is, you know, give us just the origin story of the beam and when in your recollection you can first remember this idea being raised and are you in a creative meeting or where are you at? Paint the picture for us. Just how did this begin?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll set the scene here for you. So yeah, this off season, we had a big emphasis on creating spectacles. Like, I mean, nothing different than other off seasons. We take the time to kind of rethink what we've done in the past and what we're looking at doing for the future. So for this particular offseason, we're like, you know what can we like create and what can we go in and look at to elevate our fan experience in every parts of our business? And the cool part, as you kind of briefly mentioned, the cool part about working for the Kings and just, you know, being in the organization is it's really is a collaborative effort. Like, you know, obviously Vivek has a vision of, you know, how he wants to use a team, and it comes down to the exec level with Matina and JR support. So I'll just kind of fast forward to July.
Real quick, Mo, just Matina Kolokotronis, team president. What's the – no, COO? Is that the right title?
Yeah, Matina Kolokotronis, yeah, COO.
I think you're right.
Of the Kings. Yep. And then JR John Reinhart is our president of business operations.
Yes, yes. Got you. Top execs for the Kings. Continue.
So, yeah, it's pretty cool in the fact that, we get a lot of support from our exec team led by, you know, Vivek, JR, and Matina. So yeah, this particular offseason, like, you know, it's going with spectacles. It's, you know, wasn't just entertainment focus. It was like obviously company wide and how what we can do to deliver like a cool fan experience and, you know, elevate that. So I'll go back to July of this past offseason. We're in these, you know, we have these creative breakout meetings, you know, company wide, whether it's entertainment with my department, whether it's in exec meetings, about just all kind of ideas and, you know, no dumb ideas. And, you know, the sky is blue. So I remember one particular meeting we were in and with JR. And he was recalling about, you know, what can we do to essentially let the fans know in Sacramento that the Kings won a game? And he used some of his experience or kind of was based off his experience with the Anaheim Angels, where they would light a halo outside the ballpark. And every time the Angels won, and if you're driving by, yep, the Angels won a game. So that kind of like started the basis of like, you know, what can we do here in Sac? You know, it's, you know, let's show our fans here, the greatest fans here, you know, what that could be.
Right.
So some ideas were bounced around, you know, maybe using some different monuments in Sacramento, excuse me, the I Street Bridge, the Capitol, some of their ideas were ultimately thrown around. Ultimately, I was like, what about Golden One Center? And then, so I threw out an idea of.
Am I correct real briefly? And I don't think I'm sharing anything that is off limits, but like Tower Bridge, for example, was an idea. Like let's make the entire thing purple. And then it was like, well, you have obstacles to things like that. So there was like this nothing, like you said, no bad ideas trying to get outside the box. And then you inevitably run into different conflicts that kept you guys from executing some of these ideas. Is that right?
Correct. Yeah. The I Street Bridge, the state-owned property, state capital, those would have been some major hurdles of, you know, trying to get that laid out all 82 games a year. It was just, it had been a process. So
right.
Going back to the conversation of the brainstorming, like, you know what, let's bring it back to Golden One. Let's use our property here to, you know, do something that we could. I already knew I was bringing back our company that does our lasers, which we've had since 2018. We took a year off with COVID. So they were wasn't around, but we knew we were going to bring the laser company back to use them both internally, you know, during the Kings introductions and then on the outside of the stadium. So threw some ideas around with the laser company, got on the phone with Tim of New Salt Laser, and was like, hey, you know, what can we do to make all of Golden 1 be purple? Every time the Kings won a game, I want
the whole arena, right? That was the first idea?
The whole arena.
Yeah.
That ultimately led to, well, what about a beam that would be displayed from Golden 1 Center?
Right.
And that was kind of like the base. That's like the basis of like where we're essentially right now. Like that led to like, okay, well, what would it take? And there was a ton of back and forth talks about, you know, to make that come to fruition. I'll go into like, there was some FAA like regulations that you had to.
Yes. That's my first thought. About.
Yeah. I'm like, so that was a pretty cool process to be upfront with you. Like it was, they were able to take care of once we got the idea of like, okay, we want to go forward with the beam, which is like, oh, I believe like the third week of July. We soon after that was like, okay, well, we need to get FAA approval pretty soon here. That could take some time. So it was pretty straightforward process with letting Tim and New Salt, submit our application for that. That was done within like 30 days of getting approval for all 82 games. And that was pretty cool. It was a go.
Now it gets rolled out. Slater, go ahead.
I've been to, I remember going to the first game where one of the players lit it, right? He comes over to the scorer's table after you win. He does the quick, post game interview that the crowd can hear. And then now they have a button, boom, he hits the beam lights. Then I remember you guys were on the road and Matt Barnes called in and like, it was kind of like a, you know, he had called the beam to be lit. And then I'm at the Pacers game sitting next to Sam and 50 Cent is kind of like the guest of honor for the night. He's sitting next to Vivek. And I remember saying to Sam, after it was clear you guys are going to win the game, I was like, I bet they have 50 Cent light the beam. I bet 50 Cent lights it tonight. And then sure enough, Vivek walks him right over. There's kind of the ceremonial thing, and 50 Cent is lighting the beam. Obviously, that is not, you know, in your direct first meeting. It's like, and then we're going to have this person and this person light the beam. So can you kind of take us through, like, what it has become? Because it's become something so much bigger than you probably even thought when you just, you know, first, you know, figured up the idea.
Yeah, absolutely. Great question, Anthony. And I'll kind of take you through some more timeline here. So July, we come to an agreement. We want to have the beam. We get the FAA approval application in. It gets approved. So we use the 916 day, September 16th as a day that we wanted to, you know, make a first run of this. Again, had no ideas what would it look like. Would it be the beam, you know, how far you can see it and so forth. So we planned for that day. I remember this distinctly. I was at the NBC Suites that day. I was like, I want to see if I can see it from here. And so it got dark, 9-6 day. It lit up, and I was excited. I was like, yeah, yes, this is something. It's gonna be pretty cool.
Which is to for folks not from Sacramento, that's not that far, right? I mean, is that maybe?
Yeah, it's across the freeway I-5. It's probably 2 miles from the
right, right. Because I will say, and not to jump in. One of my favorite parts of the beam fever, if you call it that, is like how I told someone else this. It's become like fish stories. You know what I mean? Like everything's bigger than it actually is. Domantas Sabonis did an interview recently where he mentioned that on his drive to Napa that he could see it an hour away. And I'm going, no, you cannot see it an hour. But it's become such a thing that everybody, you know, we might be feeling the need to exaggerate just a bit because the hype is real.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. So, anyways, 916 day, we set it. We test it. It was pretty cool. It was a good test run. We actually had it from a different location from than where it's at now, but it's still here on property. Then we fast forward. We were going to debut at opening night. And then we got our first win on the 29th, which you all recall is like a 3 o'clock game versus Miami. And of course, we get the first win then on a 3 o'clock game. So we waited till it got dark and we activated the beam. And it was seen. It was pretty cool. That second game, I think it's the 31st, if I recall. I think we were on, look at my calendar here. Yeah, we were on the road in Charlotte and we got a win there. But it was like a cloudy night. It was Halloween. It was really cloudy. That's when like it really started. It picked up and it really took first like the momentum. Like people were tweeting out like, oh, I'm taking my kids for a walk for Halloween. I see a purple light in the air. And like from there, it was like, wow, what is that? And that, I think from there, Anthony, like that's when like the hype like really like started, like the time frame, like obviously where we're at now is like a lot more. But yeah, I think like what we've been able to do, like I can talk about it now or later, Sam, like what we've been able to do with layer to it, like, you know, making the special sound effects and the ribbons, which has all been pretty cool. Like we had no original idea, like when we first started about it back in July, of like where it would take off and like not only like
right.
but national exposure and attention to it. And then so
right.
having fun, like I'll give kudos to our team here is like a bunch of talented people. Like our internal team, you know, shout out to our entertainment team with all the folks we have internally here that we've thrown out ideas to help how we can enhance it and make it even better. Like, so we've been having like so much fun, like creating like what's the next step and what could be the next step. And then like,
right.
The players like buy in, you know, and tweet out and like, can't wait to get over and have that quick interview now with Moat and then hit the beam. At first it was like, okay, we'll take a couple of questions. Now it's like, all right, we want to excite the beam and get the beam up. So it's been
well, cool and to see, like, so that's kind of a quick natural segue because I think one of my favorite parts about the beam is that it is, as an organization, there is a certain level. It is a calculated risk is not the best way of putting it, but like there is an awareness that if you start this trend and you say, we will light this every time we win, inevitably what you open yourself up to as an organization and a team is that like when they lost three in a row recently, then the mood and the vibe kind of flips the other way. Like, man, haven't seen that light in a while. You know what I mean? Like you are kind of on the hook for that. But I kind of love that. And so let's go to last night. Cause I was curious about one thing I think is overlooked in the conversation about the beam is that it gets lit home and road. And so that means a day like yesterday, which in Sacramento was a pretty cold, rainy day, they're playing the Knicks on the East Coast. And I wondered, can you tell us, because Slater mentioned earlier, the actual hitting of the beam and the button, that's not the real switch. That's not the real person turning it on. Who is turning the beam on? Where are they sitting physically on top of the building? And for a game like that Knicks game, you know, what is protocol in terms of, does that mean that that individual is sitting there? Oh, Kings are down. If they're down 20 in the third quarter, does he still have to go out there? You know, like,
like is he packing up and going home?
Right. So how does it work?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So on a typical game for like a 7 PM game, we're thinking, I just call West Coast game. New Salt is our vendor of the laser company, gets here around 2 o'clock, between 2 and 3. It's about an hour and a half setup process to get the beam. There's actually four beams or four lasers, space lasers, cannons that make up the one beam. So he gets here between 2 and 3. It's about an hour and a half setup. He sets it up on the top of the Golden One Center, right on above the grand entrance, and then he comes back down. So he's not out there in the element like
okay, all right, 40, good to know.
40 degree weather for the whole night. He sets it up. It's powered.
I had this vision of him like with one of those old school little portable TVs, you know. He's watching that game. Yeah. Hoping they pull through.
So he sets it up. He comes back down. He's able to watch the game here inside in the arena with us.
Okay.
And so for timing wise, for like a game, midway through the fourth quarter, whether we're up by 20 or down by 20, wherever the score may be, he heads back up. I would say like call it your under three timeout. A little bit around your like 3 minute mark, 4 minute mark in the fourth quarter, is where he heads back up. And then so the process of him being able to fire the laser on our cue is it doesn't take that long. So he gets back up there with a couple minutes left in the game. So again, he's not in the elements that long. And then we make the call. We'll make the call if it's a close game. We're obviously waiting to the final buzzer. Either way, we're still waiting to the final buzzer, but we know ahead of time. And if it's like, you know, the game where we blew out the Brooklyn Nets by 30 something, he's up, they're ready to go, and it's the buzzer hits. And
the crowd has wanted it like mid fourth quarter a couple times in these blowouts. They've been yelling for it.
Like the beam chance with 4 minutes, like what, or 8 minutes left. What are they?
Yeah. I loved Keegan Murray was asked about it recently after a home win, and he's so understated, but he kind of smiled and. He's just like, yeah, I thought it was a little crazy. They're asking for the beam with 2.5 minutes left in the fourth, but you know, that's all right. You know, everybody's caught up in it. And for you professionally, I do wonder, you know, because you've been in entertainment a long time and a quick contextual side story for you guys and the listeners. Like I've known Mo used to work at Sacramento City College and their sports information department, you're talking late 90s when I was trying to get a byline in the Sacramento Bee, and Mo was a friendly face who would help connect me with different players and coaches. And so, like, you go from that job to now you're in entertainment. But from a gratification standpoint, just in your professional journey, you know, is this pretty satisfying to see all of those internal creative discussions, you know, have played such a big part in creating something that, that is so special?
Yeah, super thrilled, super excited to just to see the fans take ownership of it. Like, again, like, you never know, like, when you put something out there, like, people could be making fun of, oh, you're going to be only going to like that 15 times this year or whatever it may, you know, whatever that may be based, you know, they're talking about a record. So super excited that the fans have, like, you know, bought in and loved it, and super excited for the players who actually, like, again, through their plays when we were able to light the beam.
Right.
It's very similar to, if you think back to, like, the 03 Sam, like the cowbell, like how that kind of came about, like, you know, when people were calling us a cow town, and how organically, like, the fans just started bringing cowbells to the arena, and, like, and going back to, like, that playoff series where, you know, the coaching staff of the Lakers couldn't hear because the cowbells were so loud. It kind of reminds me a little bit to that in similarity.
It's a phenomenon, man. Right? It really like is. That. You know, yeah.
And it's just took off, and, like,
although again, somebody to that point, somebody recently made a good point to me saying that, you know, Arco Arena was literally back in the day out among the cow pastures. And so the cowbell fit in, you know, Golden One, the aspirational aspect of this building is cosmopolitan, is more metropolitan. And so, you know, like, the beam is a little sexier, a little edgier, like it fits from an identity standpoint. Spin it forward for us, because I did promise I wouldn't keep you on here too long. And we really appreciate you doing this. This is a lot of fun. But what is the future of the beam? Because I know you had shared that, you know, there's, you know, thoughts and conversations about kind of taking this whole thing to the next level potentially.
Yeah, the future of the beam is here to stay. As far as I'm concerned, everyone loves it. I mean, it's the popularity. It's no one we could have never imagined it. Again, like I briefly mentioned, like we're having fun with it. Or, you know, kudos to, again, our entertainment team here and with the Kings. Like, we've added some layers to it, so you'll hear, like, you know, like the beam chants in the fourth quarter when the fans are, you know, getting crazy and up and excited about it. We've added a layer of ribbons. Ribbons is like our ribbon boards and vertical signage that enhances, like, when the player hits the beam. We've added a sound effect. Shout out to SPAC for that sound effect that we know we play when the beam is lit. But yeah, it's here to stay. It's cool. I going back to your, you know, your brightness of it, like, I think, again, like, people have seen it from, like, miles away, like,
sure, yeah, yeah.
You know, how brightness you can see it. Again, all that kind of depends on the atmosphere of that day, like if it's foggy or if it's rainy, like, or if it's humid outside, all that has to play in to see how far that beam is able to be seen.
Am I safe? And I should have asked you this offline, so I'll give full editorial control to you on this one. But I assume you don't, you know, you probably can't get into the cost aspect of it. But I do find that part of it is interesting, because even, you know, my sense anyway was that win or lose, like, you are outsourcing a service to another company. So even as far as the organization goes, I kind of love the idea that there's this commitment to have the potential and the availability to light the beam if the team can pull off the win. And if they don't, then you just cut that check and you move on. It's fine.
Yeah, we're committed. I mean, we're in an agreement that we both feel, a new salt as well as us, that we feel it's right. We're happy with the contract we have for the season. We're looking forward to keeping that in talks for next year and years beyond. I think it's something that has been beneficial for us in many ways. I mean, just, you know, just the PR has been awesome. But again,
sure,
I'll go back to the players. The players are excited about it. I'm so happy to see, like, just again, like, how, you know, with the tweets that they tweet out about, you know, Kings win, like the beam, like, it's so epic to see that. So we're excited.
Do we know who's getting credit for the beam team moniker, which I think Kevin Herter got some of that credit? I'm on board with that too. I mean, beam team is pretty legit.
Yeah, I don't know. Got credit on that one.
All right. That's all right. It works. It sticks.
Mo, I just got to know. I have to know before you go.
Okay.
How would 8-year-old Mo, if we could go back in time, how would 8-year-old Mo react if we told him one day you're going to have a laser guy on speed dial?
Oh,
seems like a dream for any child. Just have a laser guy. You can hit up whenever you want. You started this off. You were like, yeah, so I called my laser guy. I'm like,
whoa. Let's go. Let's make the beam up. Yeah, put the beam up. Yeah.
It's Star Wars stuff, man. Yeah. I like it. I like it. Mo, thank you, man. I appreciate it. I know I had to push a little bit to get you on here, just trying to give you some love. You know, this is a neat thing that you and the entire team there came up with. And again, basketball-wise, we'll see where their journey goes, right? 14-11 is better than most folks thought at this point in the season. It adds such a different vibe, especially for home games when everybody is sitting there going, man, I don't want to go home without anybody lighting the beam. Like, that would be a bummer, you know? So you don't see many folks, especially in close games, trying to leave to beat the traffic these days. You know what I mean? Like, people are not doing that LA thing and scooting out early. So you're congrats right. Again.
I'll just add, like, you should see, like, on the Kings win at home, like, there's literally people, like, stopping and taking pictures with the
every time
background for their posts. It's just, like, it's epic. Like,
look at my Instagram feed. I'm a dang reporter who is out there acting like a Kings fan or something just because the beam is fascinating. So, yeah, I go out there and, hey, there it is. Let me take another picture. Yeah. So, good stuff, man. I appreciate you doing this. It's great to see your face as always, and continued success, man. Happy for you.
Thanks for having me. Nice meeting you guys, and hope to see y'all in Sacramento at some point, maybe.
Yeah. All right, Mo. Be good, brother.
All right, you too. Take care. Bye-bye. Thanks.
All right, gentlemen. That was good stuff. That was fun. A little bit different. You know, any final thoughts on all things Beam before we get out here?
I'm just trying to get over the lasers. I just am trying to get over how casually he dropped that. Yeah. So we just called up our laser guys. It's just an unbelievable type of person to have in your phone book.
My prevailing thought or last thought is so 50 Cent has set the bar pretty high on the most, influential or famous person to light the beam to this point. Does that get topped before the season is over? That is my,
I also, man.
Yeah, probably.
Well, and you're kind of.
He's pretty good. That's pretty good.
It's pretty good, but it's also I need something a little more. No disrespect to their arrangement, but a little more organic. They have a business relationship with 50 Cent. He's out there selling this new drink that he's got in the arena. So it is 50 Cent. That's a big name.
Well, Barry Bonds was there opening night. They did not win. I think it was opening night. They didn't win the night Barry Bonds was there, but I'm sure he'll be back. So would you consider Barry Bonds? Would that eclipse 50 Cent? Because I think
I'm sports-centric, so yes. Okay. You know, but it's also, expected regionally. You know what I mean? Like, that's a guy from that part of the country. Fred, what do you say?
I think if Barry Bonds likes it, the shrubbery around the arena is going to be shrunk.
Wow. That's where you go.
Did he just take a shot?
We're just trying to have good vibes on here, and you're dropping Balco references. Maybe they should merge their two Kings marketing genius ideas, because the cowbell, they always play that video, and I actually told the Kings executive this. They play the video of the old SNL skit, with Will Ferrell, I need more, and with oh Lord, how am I forgetting his name? You guys got to help me out here. Who's the other actor who actually drops a line about we need more cowbell? No,
Christopher Walken,
Michael Smeltz. Thank you. And I'm not going to do the impersonation, but that SNL skit, if they had Will Ferrell, Mr. Cowbell, make an appearance and come hit the beam button, I think that would be, there'd be some synergy there. That'd be good.
Well, we will see, Sam. I got to get on a flight to Milwaukee. There's, by the way, to close it out with Denver airport stuff, there was birds in the Denver airport. That's at least something different, right?
Newsflash from Anthony Slater. They have airplanes at airports.
Birds, straight up birds that seem to look birds. Kind of interesting.
All right. Thank you, everyone, as always. Thank you, Slater. Thank you, Cats. Thank you to Mo Brazelton. That was fun, a little bit different. We'll see how many more times the Kings light the beam this year. And we're going to get out of here. Thank you.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.